Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
By the recommendation of one of my preacher friends, I've started doing something a little bit different recently. I've started consuming my news via photography, released by some of the major news outlets. Now, that's not the only place to get my news. And it sounds a little strange, a little artsy, but it's compelling. If you've ever seen good photography before, you know that a picture really does speak 1,000 words. And it's able to articulate some of the emotion in a moment that a talking head just can't do with words. So for example, a great picture can capture the hilarity of a moment, or the ingenuity of a moment, or the absurdity of a moment, or the beauty of a moment, or the tragedy of a moment, or even the humanity of a moment. Now, my favorite place to get these photos over the last several months has been the Atlantic's website. Why? Well, because every single week, the Atlantic churns out 35 new photos of the week. And I've spent hours just looking at these, and I've tracked back to almost all the photos that they've released in 2020. I'd encourage you to do the same this Christmas, to do a little 2020, you know, nostalgia tour, sip some coffee, look at the photos, because it's compelling, compelling stuff. But here's what I've found. 2020, this is not going to surprise you, has been disproportionately loaded with tragedy. It's been a hard year for our country. It's been a hard year for the human race. So I want to do something a little different to start the message off today. What I want to do is I want to show you some of the photos that broke me. And together as a church, I want to go through a time of lament. Yeah, see that hand in the back? Go ahead. Tyler, what's lament? Well, lament is one of the most spiritual things you can do in hard times. But lament is crying out to God and acknowledging that this side of heaven, things aren't the way that they should be. The disciples lament. Jesus laments. There's an entire book in the Old Testament called Lamentations. Lament cultivates hope in our heart for heaven. Lament cultivates hatred in our heart for the fact that sin is still among us. And lament is one of the best spiritual practices during times of suffering for both mental health and wellness. And I know a lot of us need that. So right now, together as a church, I want to do something that a lot of American churches don't do. I want to lament. And I want to throw one caveat in there. As I roll through some of these pictures, I'm going to ask you to respond, even though we're not together in the same room. I'll stop at some certain points, and I'm going to say the words, the world can be dark. And wherever you are, whether you're watching with your family, whether you're watching alone, maybe you can type it into the comment section, but I want you to respond by saying, Jesus is the light. Because that's important for us to remember this Christmas. Let's practice one time. The world can be dark. Jesus is the light. All right, let's lament together. To begin, I want to start with the pandemic. COVID-19, a virus that has taken something from all of us. This is a picture of something I never knew existed until 2020. It's called a mobile morgue. Bodies lie here in a refrigerated trailer in El Paso, Texas, in order to accommodate the surge of deaths this past November. And for some of us, that's what COVID has confronted us with, our own mortality. Now, for others of us, we were reminded this Thanksgiving of the mortality of our loved ones, as we no longer have a loved one around the table with us. Whether that be from COVID or likely from something else, the holidays are an extraordinarily difficult time to go through without loved ones, especially for the first time. So church, the world can be dark. Jesus is light. Now, if you're like me, you celebrated Thanksgiving alone this year without extended family. And it's frustrating. It frustrates me most for my kids because Halloween was weird, Thanksgiving was socially distanced, and Christmas will not be the same this year. And for most of us, COVID has been less about sickness and more about the financial and mental challenge of it. All of our routines, our savings, our jobs, our gyms, our entertainment outlets were turned upside down. This is a picture of a gym in California where people are literally exercising in bubbles behind plastic sheets and workout pods. Speaking of bubbles, the NBA was played in a bubble this year. Football stadiums sit mostly empty. And baseball was played before cardboard cutouts. This here is an aerial view of something else I didn't know existed until 2020. It's called a taxi field, a taxi field. So picking up taxi fares has become hard. So hard that many taxes are being mothballed and returned to fleet companies. In London, they're stored in a taxi field. And this is an image that reminds us of so many folks who have taken pay cuts or lost a job during this season. Now, this next picture is a picture of demonstrations in France protesting the shutdown of non-essential businesses. Career plans lost. The dreams of small business owners gone. The joy that many of us get from our work taken for a season. This next picture is of a professional dancer forced to take her act to a street corner because it's the only place she can find a crowd, much less a paycheck. Now, I have many friends who are actors, singers, speakers, performers, artists, and all of these occupations require crowds, which has brought them to a screeching halt. And I lament with them. This picture right here sums up the loneliness, disorientation, and the mental health crisis we all face. Yes, this is what we call rock bottom. This is a picture of a man, drunk, alone, passed out in a plastic bubble outside of a bar long after the bar's closed. And we chuckle a little, but if you've made it through this season without significant mental health challenges to your kids, employees, friends, family, self, then you're one of the lucky ones. So church, the world can be dark, but Jesus is light. Now, if COVID wasn't enough, we were confronted once again this year with the reality of systemic racism, hate groups, rioting, and civil unrest. Here's a picture of Louisville as police officers make arrests during protests over Breonna Taylor. Make no mistake, citizens of the Ville, we just lived through the single most racially charged moment in perhaps the history of our city. The entire world's eyes were on us. And I am personally proud of how our church responded. Now, not everyone responded, though, with the same truth and love. This is a picture of a far-right militia and a white pride organization reflected in the glasses of an Antifa protester in Georgia. This is an American flag burning in Kenosha, Wisconsin. This is a Wendy's in Atlanta, Georgia, where Rashard Brooks was killed. And this is a picture of a St. Louis couple pointing guns at protesters in their neighborhood. This is an NYPD car burning in Brooklyn this past May. And if you've heard me talk about this at all, then you know I believe racism is alive and well and a horrific problem in our country that we still struggle with deeply. And I am a proponent of leveraging your constitutional rights to fight injustice, but in nonviolent forms. Rioting, looting, burning, I don't condone. But perhaps, church, perhaps underneath all the rage is some truth that we need to wake up to. You see, church, the world can be dark. Jesus is the light. If all this wasn't enough for the good old USA, this year we also had natural disasters like the California wildfires that ripped through the West. Or Hurricane Laura, which smashed the South. After 150 mile per hour winds, this is a picture of a Waffle House sign seen in Louisiana. And then as we wait on the Electoral College to validate the election, we are reminded that we just lived through one of the most contentious and embarrassing election cycles in recent history. Depicted here is a Trump supporter and an anti-Trump demonstrator nose to nose in Washington, D.C., week after the election. And I don't think they're singing Kumbaya. In some ways, this sums up the state of our politics as we bring 2020 to a close. Last picture here. This is a shot of the moon setting behind the Statue of Liberty on November 16th in New York City. And this image stunned me because right now it feels like an apocalyptic moment in this country. Some of us wonder if the sun has finally set on American prosperity. So one last time, church, the world can be dark. Jesus is the light. Now, I want to be clear. Do you know what unifies, summarizes all of the images that we just looked at together? In one way or the other, every one of those pictures illustrates the devastating infiltration of sin on God's good creation. That's what we lament in 2020, the malignant nature of sin among us. That's our most fundamental enemy. Not a person, not a politician, not a pandemic. Sin. Sin. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12 says, "For our struggle is not against enemies of blood and flesh, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." Or in other words, translation, sin is the power that is accusing us, tempting us, deceiving us, possessing us, deforming us, dehumanizing us, and devastating us. And 2020 has reminded us just how powerful sin is. Now, despite its power, though, and sometimes our powerlessness against it, I believe sin made one fatal mistake in 2020. And that is, it broke us, some of us, just a little too much. It broke us and revealed to many of us the reality of our own fragility, fear, and desperation before God. It broke us and showed us that we aren't capable of being our own God. Fact, the secular story isn't working, y'all, and 2020 has proven that. What's the secular story? Well, the secular story tells us that in order to achieve salvation, to live a full life, you gotta place trust in yourself. It tells us that through human progress and personal achievement, we can live the dream. And in 2020, that dream came to a screeching halt. Crash landing, man. That normally it takes a few decades of our lives for us to figure out that there is no salvation to be found here. But 2020 microwaved a lifetime of pain and disappointment and suffering and reality checks into about 8 months. And did the demons know? Didn't they know better? Okay, so I wanna coach you guys for a second on how to demon real quick, okay? And this is not from personal experience, for the record. It's just, I read the Bible. And so I'll just give you a little bit of advice here. One of the most effective ways to keep people blind to their need for God is to keep them believing they're in control by allowing their lives to be pretty good. Not too good, not too bad, just pretty good. You don't want their lives to get too bad. You want to keep them at just enough affluence, just enough comfort, where they never have to hit their knees in desperation before God. You want to keep them believing that somehow they're their own provider. But at the same time, you don't want their lives to get too good either, because when your life gets too good, well, sometimes you can realize that living the dream isn't all that dreamy. You want to constantly keep people with a vision of someone who's a little richer or a little more powerful or a little more famous than they are. So they believe that if I keep aspiring towards that, then one day I might live a full life. Okay, here's the tension a good demon will keep you living in. The tension between wanting more and having enough. That wanting more is a dangling carrot that keeps you believing that you can one day save yourself if I could just get the carrot. And having enough is a blinder that keeps you from seeing your desperate need for God. And that's the trick. Don't let people hit rock bottom, because then they realize God's the only place left to turn. And don't let people summit the mountain, because when they get to the top, they might realize that the top isn't all it's cut out to be. C.S. Lewis wrote this fascinating book years ago called Screwtape Letters. Many of you guys have probably seen it before. Dedicated it to J.R.R. Tolkien, writer of Lord of the Rings, one of his good buddies. Now, in this satire, Lewis tells the story of a chief demon in the bureaucracy of hell called Screwtape. And Screwtape writes letters in this book to his nephew, a young demon who's just learning how to tempt, called Wormwood. And the thing's hilarious, but also terrifying, chilling, and it cuts you to the core. And in this one chilling moment, this is what Screwtape advises Wormwood. He says, "Indeed, Wormwood, the safest road to hell is the gradual one. The gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts." Or translation, he says, give him a pretty good life. Pretty good life. And so many of us were living that. We were living this sort of middle class limbo before 2020, but then COVID gut punched us and brought us to our knees. So what did we do, America? How did we respond? Well, you remember, we decorated for Christmas on November 1st. Like, socially distanced Halloween had been over for a few hours, and you look over in the corner and your wife's sipping eggnog, hanging garland, and the Christmas tree is lit. And you're like, okay, let's turn on some pentatonics. I mean, you were there, right? Don't believe me? Well, allow me to present to the jury Exhibit A. This is a picture of one of our preachers and pastoral care minister, Melinda Jividen, with her beautiful daughter, Amelia, standing in front of her Christmas tree. Check me on this, Facebook, on November 1st. Shame on you, Melinda. Confess your sins. No, okay, for real though, Melinda is America in this picture. Truly, she is. Because everybody, like, didn't you sense it? Everybody just started sprinting. There's like this collective national longing for us to take December and pull it into November. Now, did you ever ask yourself why? Why were we so eager to celebrate Christmas? Well, I'll tell you why. Because I think deep down inside, we know that we need it. Some of us consciously know, but some of us subconsciously sense that there's good news to be found in the celebration of this time of the year. You know, for generations now, Christians have called the Christmas season Advent. Advent. It's a four-week season before Christmas, where Christians wait with hopeful expectation of celebrating the climactic moment in human history where the light broke into the darkness and God became one of us, because he loves us. In Luke chapter 1, Zechariah, John the Baptist's father, in Luke's Christmas story, sings this prophecy regarding the birth of Jesus. It says, because of God's tender mercy, the morning light from heaven, what a name for Jesus, the morning light from heaven is about to break upon us to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, and to guide us to the path of peace. And that's where many of us are. Many of us are sitting in darkness. We're sitting in the shadow of death, and we need light to guide us to the path of peace. Well, I've got bad news and I got good news for you this Christmas. Which one you want first? Bad news? Okay, you're an adult. Let's just do the bad news first, all right? The bad news is that the secular saviors that we have been placing our faith, hope, and trust in can't provide this light. The false gods of human control and human progress can't provide the fullness that we're looking for. For many of us, we depended on our own control. We worshiped control before 2020, but it takes a radical experience of losing all control for you to realize just how little control you have, doesn't it? And so we turned our affections and our hopes to the holy trinity of medicine, science, and technology, only to watch as hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives to COVID, only to watch as our nation locked down and is now having a mental health impact that we won't know the carnage of for years to come. And so we turn our hopes and affections to wealth, economic prosperity, and success, only to watch our economy tank. I mean, how many paychecks have been lost? Have you seen the lines? The food banks and the food pantries. We know firsthand here at the Love of the Ville Church how many thousands of people we've had to feed. And there's no amount of government stimulus that can fix this. You know, as Americans, we have this liturgy as we worship money, where we work, save, spend. Work, 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 save, 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 spend, spend, spend. And COVID took our work, it crashed our savings, and then it closed all the outlets that we like to go spend. And so we turn our hopes and affections these last few months to politics, politicians, and political platforms, only to be embarrassed, disillusioned. I wonder if there has ever been a season in the history of the United States where the government has had as little credibility as it does right now. Sometimes I wonder if the Capitol building and the White House isn't just brimming over with narcissists who want to fight each other over their own power rather than public service. So medicine, technology, wealth, political power, all these can be powerful tools wielded by the right hands, but they make abuse of God's that can't give us what we're looking for. So where might we find salvation, y'all? Well, John 1:1 tells us the story. This is the gospel. In the beginning, the Word, Jesus, already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. Look, this is the good news of Christmas. The God who created the universe, Jesus the Christ, the one who said, "Light, and there was light in the beginning," stooped down and became one of us, and then stooped down even lower and became our sin. This is the true miracle of Christmas. The great God of the universe cares about your little life, your broken dreams, your crushed hopes, your lamenting prayers, your pain, your suffering, your anguish. He cares about you. And this Christmas, he didn't want anything from you. He just wants to be with you. He wants to bring the warmth and the illumination of his light into your life. Dane Ortlund wrote recently that one of the great tragedies of human thought is that we don't actually believe that, though. It's hard for us to. A long quote here, but stay with me because this is powerful. Ortlund writes, "We project onto Jesus our skewed instincts about how the world works. Human nature dictates that the wealthier a person, the more they tend to look down on the poor. Or the more beautiful a person, the more they are put off by the ugly. And without realizing what we're doing, we quietly assume that one so high and exalted like Jesus has corresponding difficulty drawing near to the despicable and unclean like us. Sure, Jesus comes close to us, we agree, but he holds his nose. I mean, this risen Christ, after all, is the one whom God has highly exalted, at whose name every knee will bow down in submission. This is the one whose eyes are like a flame of fire and whose voice is like the roar of many waters, and who has a sharp two-edged sword coming out of his mouth, and whose face is like the shining sun in full strength. In other words, this is one so unspeakably brilliant that his resplendence cannot adequately be captured with words, so ineffably magnificent that all language dies away before his splendor. And this high and holy Christ does not cringe at reaching out and touching dirty sinners and numb sufferers. Such embrace is precisely what he loves to do. Ortlund goes on and says, he cannot bear to hold back. We naturally think of Jesus touching us the way a little boy reaches out to touch a slug for the first time. Face screwed up, cautiously extending an arm, giving a yelp of disgust upon contact. Ew! You know, and instantly withdrawing. Not Jesus, he says. When the leper says to Jesus, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. Jesus immediately stretches out his hand, touches him, and with the words, I will, he makes him clean. The word will here in both the leper's request and in Jesus' answer is the Greek word for wish or desire. Ortlund writes, the leper was asking about Jesus' deepest desire, and Jesus revealed his deepest desire by healing him. And his deepest desire this Christmas is to heal you as well. So you know what I love about light? All you have to do is turn it on. All you have to do is strike the match, open the blinds, throw open the door, and walk into the sun's rays. All you have to do is flip the switch. And then at the speed of light, it assaults your senses and illuminates your heart. Look, for many of us, we have been awoken by 2020 from hibernation in the middle of the winter. And we have realized that we don't have the power to be our own God. We have the pride. We have the confidence to think we can be, but we don't have the power. Our mortality has broken in to our reality. Okay, and if your mortality hasn't broken in for you yet, it will eventually. She'll break up with you. You'll lose the job. The career path will crash. You'll get older. Your kid will go rebel. One of your loved ones will get sick or pass away. And in that moment, you'll have a choice. In the shadow of death, will you beg for the light to shine upon you? Or just do what everyone else does and put on a happy face and pretend like you got it all together? This is some of you watching today. If that's you, and you are slowly sliding into the painful realization that you weren't made to be a God, but rather you were made by God, and he has set eternity in your heart, then I want to extend to you an invitation today to step into the light. In fact, in just a moment, we are going to sing a classic Christmas hymn. And I want you to utilize that moment as a time of invitation. If you need prayer after a hard year, if you want to embrace Jesus for the first time ever, or if you need the love and compassion of Jesus's body, his church, to wrap their arms around you this season, I want you to reach out to us during this song. Email us, call the church. On social media right now, send us a message. And this week, we want to reach out and pastor you. We want to reach out and connect you, most importantly, to the real and true reason of the season, and that's Jesus, the light that shines in the darkness. Now, I'll close with this before the song. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I'm reminded here of how Bonhoeffer died in prison. If you know anything about Bonhoeffer, he was a pastor and a theologian who lived at the height of the Nazi Reich. He actually participated in an assassination and overthrow attempt against Hitler, but it was a failed one. And so in 1943, he was thrown in prison. Eventually, he was killed in 1945 in a concentration camp, Flossenbürg. But on December 1st, 1943, on his first Christmas in prison, he wrote this letter to his fiance. He writes, "I think we're going to have an exceptionally good Christmas, Maria. The very fact that every outward circumstance precludes our making provision for it will show whether we can be content with what is truly essential. I used to be very fond of thinking up and buying presents, but now that we have nothing to give, the gift God gave us in the birth of Christ will seem all the more glorious. The emptier our hands, the better we understand what Luther meant by his dying words. We're beggars, it's true. The poorer our quarters, the more clearly we perceive that our hearts should be Christ's home on earth."